You're listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. For more information and to support the show, head to wespeakcommon.com.
This week, we're talking about homebrew worlds and writing. How do you find the motivation to keep working on your world? And is there a secret second thing that you actually really need? Welcome to We Speak Common. Hello, and welcome to a brand new episode of the D&D podcast for everyone, because here we speak common. This is the show brought to you in partnership with the Dice Dungeon, your one-stop shop for all things D&D related, but specifically beautiful sets of wonderful D&D dice. And actually, as I am reading this right now, they have announced a brand new line of dice, and they're resin dice too. So premium dice at a not so premium cost. Go and have a look at the Dice Dungeon. There's a link in the description below. And of course, you can use the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout to get 10% off your entire order. We'll talk a little bit more about those wonderful new dice a little bit later. We're also brought to you in partnership with Describe, spelled D-S-C-R-Y-B, add a .com on the end. That is their website. It's also linked in the description below. Funny that, isn't it? They've got professional creative writers, actual real-life bards doing the hard work, creating text just like box text from your favorite adventures that you can use in any game. They got scenes, monsters, spells, stuff for the player. They got songs. They got pretty much anything you could imagine. There are over 9,800 scenes available right now. 500 of them are for free, so you can go and use them in your game. I mean, like tonight, if you wanted to. Go and have a look. Have a little peruse. Check out the scenes, and if you want to subscribe to Describe and get full access to over 9,500 scenes, then you can use the code COMMON at checkout to get 10% off your subscription every month for the first 2 years that it is active. Boom. Don't say we didn't do anything for you. We'll talk about partners at some point a little bit later, but right now, back from his deep undersea lair, it is Cthulhu's bitch himself, Dave.
Hi, Ben.
Hey. I think that's a fair introduction for you.
I'll take it. Cthulhu's bitch. Why not?
Is it not accurate?
I mean, possibly. No. Who knows? I won't reveal the secrets.
No, well, you can't, because it will, in fact, drive everyone listening to this podcast mad.
Exactly.
That's how that works. How are you? Okay?
I'm okay. I'm tired, but I'm okay. We're here.
Mm-hmm. We're here. We move. We move. Did I ask you if that was a northern phrase, or did I ask James if that's a northern phrase?
We move.
Yeah.
I've never heard that in my life.
I'd never heard it before until I moved up north.
No.
It's like,
maybe it's a Manchester thing, right? Maybe.
So, because James obviously was from Manchester.
Original north, yeah.
Yeah, he's a northerner. Yeah. He said he used to say it all the time too, but not so much when he came. We move. So it's like in context, like, let's say we were passing each other in the office, and you have that awkward, like, how you doing? You all right? And you go, yeah, okay. You're a bit tired, you know, heavy workload. I was up late last night with the kids. Then you'd go, but you know, we move.
As never, in, like, we keep going. Never heard that in my entire life.
Get it. No?
Never.
Okay. That's fully ingrained itself into my vocabulary now. Having moved, I now move.
But you do work with a lot of Southerners, though.
Do I?
Yes.
Jordan is technically a Southerner. Hattie is a Southerner.
Correct.
Everyone else is a Northerner, I think.
No, but still. That's two.
Look, two isn't a lot. That's not a lot. I mean, okay, they're two of the ones I see most of the time.
Yes. Do they say it? Does anyone else say it apart from
Hattie? Says it. Hattie says it. Okay, and Hattie's lived in the north for a long time.
Okay.
Look, we're all just human beings. It doesn't really matter at the end of the day, does it?
I mean, you know.
We're all just experiencing life through the mortal shell, and we'll eventually return to the infinite cosmos. So let's all be nice to each other.
Okay.
We're getting spiritual already.
Yeah, okay. It's anyway. Happening.
Well, I'm glad you're okay, even if you
Thank
are tired.
You. Yes.
I am... I'm pretty similar, although I'm feeling pretty good because I think I'm like fighting a cold off, but I was on my way home today, and like my favorite part about my walk to and from work is when you like get to a bit where the sun's shining and you can feel on your face and it's like bright and it's like, oh, it makes me smile. I love it. Love the sunlight. But I'm basically a big plant.
Yeah.
He says with his big jug of water right here.
Yeah.
And like the sun was really shining and I was like, do you know what? I did it yesterday. I'm going to do it tonight. I'm going to go up to the roof. I'm going to jump rope and lift some weights, do a workout. Mm-hmm. And I got the flat and was like, don't wanna, got laundry to hang, but I went and I did it and I feel good for it, so good. I'm feeling
that's
good.
Really good.
I still have laundry to hang, but I can do that later. Someone's walking in through the back car park and like staring at me recording the podcast. That's hilarious. She's gone now. I'm right in front of the big like floor ceiling window, so also funny enough, not a good place to record podcasts, very echoey.
Interesting.
So don't judge me. I made this choice on purpose, knowing that. Anyway, shall we... I was just covering my back in case anyone works in audio hears that. You know,
I appreciate it.
I'm aware that that's not an optimal place to sit and talk into a microphone. I'm very aware. But it's a nice view, so, of the car park.
Do you feel like you're being judged deeply now by people?
Yeah. All the time. I feel like I'm always being judged by people.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because you are Ben. Shall we talk about Dungeons and Dragons?
We should probably talk about things.
Yeah. I love how it's always chaotic with you.
I know.
Okay, so we're going to talk about a thing today that I think I'm not very good at.
Okay.
I'm going to rephrase that. I know I'm not good at.
Okay.
I know I'm bad at this. I'm really bad at this.
Yeah.
And I think that in having this conversation, I'll become really good at it for about 3 days.
Wow,
Then I'll be really bad at it again.
Amazing. Well, let's get you to 3 days and then we'll...
Yeah, but my days are busy. I'm not actually going to do anything. No. But I'll have the motivation to build my homebrew world because that's what we're talking about. Okay, I've got homebrew world. You have... How many, Dave?
I have one homebrew.
How many homebrew worlds do you have, Dave?
I have one and an old one that we don't talk about because it's real bad.
So that would be two, Dave.
I have DOS homebrew worlds.
DOS. I have not physically like written or typed anything for my homebrew world in well over a year. Easily. Probably like two.
I'm probably the same, but until recently.
Okay. So, I have, however, done a lot of thinking about it. And I know everything. I know it all.
This is it.
I haven't written it down anywhere.
I think that's the key thing. That's what I was going to say as well. Like, your brain holds up this information, but you need to get it on the paper.
Right. So before we go into how we find this motivation to keep working on stuff, and specifically the homebrew world, which I think is its own monster because...
Yeah.
Whenever I go to work on my homebrew world, I need to stop saying that in full sentences. Whenever I go to work on my world, I like sit down. I'm like, okay, I'm going to type about this thing. And as I'm typing, 60 things spawn out of it and I suddenly get overwhelmed. So before we get into all that stuff, let's not talk about our worlds, but talk about like their conception.
Okay.
So do you only want to talk about one of them, right?
I can talk about the other one. It's not like a taboo subject.
Okay, tell me about your taboo homebrew world.
So my taboo homebrew world is actually very fleshed out. It's,
oh no, that's a shame.
It's the thing I created when I started getting into Dungeons and Dragons.
And as we all know, our first drafts are always terrible.
It is a hodgepodge of Egyptian mythology.
I like it. Keep going.
Okay. It's going to get bad.
Keep going.
Egyptian mythology, a desert setting, which
makes sense.
They match. They're right.
Yeah.
And then
that works.
A lot of like Dishonored references.
Oh, no.
And like just weird things that shouldn't be in there. Like there's a forest in the desert. That doesn't make sense. No way, it's not an oasis, it's just a forest.
Okay.
Also it didn't have any rivers, which is something I realized, which is hilarious.
Deserts, so, they're dry.
Yeah. It's just But the the players enjoyed it at the time, but they had also never played Dungeons and Dragons until then, so...
So they weren't a good sounding board?
Yeah.
Okay. What about your actual homebrew world now?
So my beautiful new homebrew world is...
Oh, look, I can hear the love in your voice already.
...is a very fae-inspired and, like, British-Irish mythology. Mm. And just, like, with a little bit of, like, Germanic in there and, like, Scandinavian and all very, like, European-y, fae-y lore and mythology, and I love it.
I like that. And when did you start working on it? How long have you been working on it for?
Oh, this is a long time. Probably about 3 years. So I built the map a long time ago and, like, had a lot of thoughts, and then I didn't touch it because I discovered Eberron in that time. Mm. And then started running solely Eberron. So I discarded it and put it on the back burner for like 2 years until now, really.
Okay. So my homebrew world.
Yes.
Which I've talked about on and off throughout the years. Started off as one continent that I built to run a game. And I ran a campaign, I wrote a campaign, and I built a world, built a continent for it.
Yeah.
And... that campaign will never finish, ever.
I don't very think. Sad.
Very sad. But it's also a terrible campaign. Mm. It's awful. but that was my first attempt at, like, I'm going to build something homebrew.
Yeah.
And the campaign spanned a long time, so it was so inconsistent in sessions and things. So I was constantly working on it, and eventually I went, do you know what? I'm not going to bin it. I'm going to rebuild it. I'm going to, like, remaster it.
Yeah.
And I did that. So my homebrew world has been being worked on for about 10 years now. And even then it's not finished. So because I'm so inconsistent, but I've got the entire, like, I've got the elevator pitch, which I think is an important thing to have with it.
Yeah.
And I've got the, like, I have all of the deities and pantheons done. And I use a lot of, like, this, like, the elven pantheon and the dwarven pantheon exist because it's easy to then port D&D stuff into it.
Right, yeah.
But then there's, overall, there's, like, the main, the big thing, the big pantheon is my own creation.
Yeah.
Using gods from across the sources so that when you bring, like, races and stuff in from different D&D games, it all makes sense. So I've got all the divinity stuff done. I've got the creation myth done. I've got, like, the world state and, like, the timeline and the big cool, like, fun thing that happens all the time, the convergence, which I've talked about before.
Yeah.
So I've got, like, all of that, and I have all the different plot hooks and things, like the world plot hooks, and like, there's two countries that are at war and two that I've not even touched. I just kind of roughly know what they are, and they've all got names. So, like, it's in a really good way. Like, I could run in it.
Yeah,
easily.
You could just do it now. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've got a map. I've got a world map. I haven't populated the map with, like, the cities and stuff, but it's got the mountains and I've done the tectonic plates and, like, all that stuff. So I've done a lot and I know a lot, but whenever I come to write it out again, it just, like, I just can't.
Yeah.
So it's tricky. And when I say I've been working on it for 10 years, I mean, like, literally, I will just sit and think and plan and write in my head. Just never do it on paper.
This is it. Yeah.
I think one point, one of the only times I feel like I can truly say I've had writer's block, I just could not think of anything. I could not write.
Yeah.
I just really struggled for, like, 3 weeks. I was like, I said to my ex at the time, I was like, my girlfriend at the time, I was like, I just can't. Right, and I know I need to for this, like, this game that I'm gonna run. Like, I just can't. And it was really stressing me out. And then we put on a film. We put on a Studio Ghibli film called Laputa.
Castle in the Sky. Yep.
And,
amazing film.
Amazing film. Within the first 30 seconds. And the way that film starts is with, like, this music, and there's, like, the blue sky, and there's this big scene of the castle in the sky, and literally within 30 seconds I just bawled my eyes out and paused it, and she was like, what's wrong? And I was like, I've just had like 60,000 ideas. Like he just broke it. Yeah. Something about that sequence just broke it. And I was like, I'm really sorry. I need to like write. Yeah. And I grabbed my phone and I like wrote everything down in notes. And I was like, cool, I'm good. Let's go. Let's watch the movie.
Yeah.
And I was suddenly like so happy. And I was like, a weight was lifted. So I don't think it's because I've got writer's block, because I had that moment and that's writer's block for me. But I just, for some reason, whether it's motivation or dedication, and I think that's something we can talk about.
Yeah.
You know what it is? Don't bring myself to it.
You know what it is for me is when I try and force myself to do it.
Yeah.
And my body's just like, nah, you ain't gonna do this.
I find though that I always feel like I'm forcing myself because I've got so much going on in life, like life gets in the way, that when I sit down to write, this feels like we're talking about writing a book, but in a way it is
almost writing a book though, because it's writing a story, a campaign of the world. Setting, yeah. isn't it? Though, yeah. Like that's exactly what it's like.
And I just feel like I don't know, when I go, okay, I'm going to block out an hour to write, and I go, I should be doing something else, or I should be relaxing, or you know, it's tricky. Like motivation is tricky. Really
it's really, really difficult.
One thing that I do, or I've done, or I've noticed that helps to get me excited and therefore I guess motivated, is having a conversation with someone about it, which is the hardest 100%. Thing because like no one wants to just espouse world lore to someone. It's not like whenever you've accidentally ended up in a conversation where someone's like, and then my world has this, and then there's this age and this, it's like, okay, stop talking. But if someone will sit and talk to you and like hear you and like go, oh, that's cool. And oh, this, it does get you excited to work on it.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely.
The more people you tell about your 1,000-year history of your make-believe world, the less people there are to tell you about, about your 1,000-year history.
See, I do that about with everyone, although I spout it out left, right, and center, as everyone in the server is aware. But, I feel like it's, you know what it is with homebrew stuff is it's so personal.
Yeah.
And you've made that it's your baby, and I think I have this fear that if I tell someone something and they're like, well, that's a bit average, you're like, you know, like, you're like, oh my god, it's terrible.
But then the reverse of that is when you tell them something and they go, that's genius, what right? I think of that. Yeah. And you're like, oh, yes.
Do you want to hear something really fun that I have someone has said that to about my current homebrew world?
Go on.
Is I have a fae. An archfey called Glan. Glan the Pure. And he thinks he's pure because he gave loads of his negative emotions to a bunch of animals and they grew into great beasts and they're like embodiments of those emotions.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That actually is fantastic.
Yeah.
That's such great myth. Thank you. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot.
I like it a lot as well.
The one I had was when I told someone how the convergence works and what it is.
That is very fun. I know about this from the podcast and we've spoken to it about it before. Very, very fun. Very, very cool.
My favorite example, I need to explain it again.
Go on, go
Long story
it.
Short, the convergence happens there's a period of time, it happens every so often. There's a whole calendar system behind it. And it's when all of the planes of existence are not actually, but this is like how layman's describe it. They're so close. The veils are so thin that you can like walk from one plane to another easily or easier than normal. And so weird monsters can pop up or like, you know, they have these celebrations. It's like celebrating a millennial year. Basically.
Yeah, it's like when the planets align. Like that's what it's like,
But it's more frequent. It happens. Yeah, it happens every 48 years, I want to say, I think it is. Or no, there's 48 convergences. It's every 26 years, something like that. But the way the calendar the way that like the worlds are set, not the worlds, the like years are tracked, is it'll be, it's the 23rd year of the 48th convergence.
Okay, so it's part of the whole, like, it's the vibe, right?
That's how thing. People track time. They're like, okay, well,
that's so fun.
Because it happens every 26 years, it's, it's the 13th year of the 6th convergence. Hey, class, what happened in the 13th year of the 6th convergence? that was the year that this happened, is like how I imagine it.
Yeah, yeah. Do they like know it's coming and then prepare for it? Then is this something like a city would prepare for or like
Well, that's so cool. Because they have like festivals and things around
that's so fun.
And it's like kind of a little bit inspired by or similar to like the Day of the Dead, and how like everyone can, like, celebrates their lost ones and things like that, and
kills their
connection to the planes. But my moment of that's brilliant, like that's a great example of it being brilliant, is that there's two continents, Esteroth and Idria.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were once connected.
Okay.
And in one of the convergences, I want to say it was like the 28th or something, I can't remember without looking, the continents split and pulled apart, and this ocean rushed in and filled the space and created the Quake Sea. There's like this great earthquake. So that's called the Quake Sea.
Also, great name.
FYI. Yeah, right. Love it. It's like my favorite part.
Yeah.
And these are the two continents I've like made the most out of. And Esteroth is all about the free states and the free cities, and they're all singular. Mm-hmm. Whereas Idria is like communist,
but just straight
but
up.
but in a good way. They're like good communists.
Interesting. So they're like anarchists.
Sort of. So they're called, the country is called Idria, and the republic is called the singular state of Idria. And they're like, okay, we all look after each other. We all help each other.
Okay.
We'll work together. If one part of the continent needs more support, we'll support it. No one gets neglected.
Is there a government?
Yeah.
There is a government.
Yeah. The state representatives.
Interesting. That's a very interesting concept.
Exactly, right? It's weird.
Yeah.
And the way I can sum it up, in the latest episode of The Last of Us, spoiler alert, Maria. Yeah. Maria in Jax, it's not a big spoiler. She's explaining their like town and how it works.
Yeah.
And Joel goes, oh, so you're communists, and his brother goes, No, we're not communists. And she goes, no, that's exactly what we are. We're a commune. We all look after each other. We are communists. And that's like, but they're good people and it works.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how I imagine Idria.
Yeah.
But
communism does
scale,
work. Side note, communism does work on a small scale.
Okay, let's not get into it. So now just imagine it worked for a country, right? That's the singular state of Idria.
Yeah, that's crazy.
But when they split, three of Idria's cities were left on Esteroth.
Whoa,
and Esteroth went,
wild.
Oh, well, they're ours now.
Mine.
And the free cities, as they're called, were like, well, they'll be part of Esteroth, we'll bring them in. And so they went over, and they didn't invade, but they went over and said, hey, like, you're free now of Idria. You have to live by Esteroth's rules. You have to become your own thing. And they were like, no. And so the free cities tried to invade them and take them.
Whoa.
Each at a time, one at a time, each city tried. And they couldn't, but obviously they wouldn't band together because they're the free cities.
Yeah, yeah.
And then one day Idria were like, they spent their time building up, this is just becoming a lore espousal now.
It's fine.
Sorry.
Carry
they spent
on.
Their time building up their army, sailed the Quake Sea, invaded, took the three remaining cities back.
Right, okay.
So now there's a part of Esteroth that is Idria.
Just like this tiny little
At the top,
cool.
At the top on the right hand side.
Okay.
And so the free cities are worried that they're going to invade them and have war because that's what Esteroth did. So they've kind of gone against their word, and they're now forming what's known as the Rector's Alliance. The Rector in one of the cities who is in control forms this coalition of the free cities, but one of them doesn't want to join, and so they're not at full strength, and there's this looming war or threat of war. It's like Cold
right,
War,
yeah.
Basically.
I like it.
And the Rector is now a child because his father died in a big wizard duel. Like this strange man walked into the city, challenged him, and they both disappeared. So his son's in charge, and he's being like manipulated by a guy, and like, oh my God, there's so much going on.
There's a lot going on. I love it.
It's so cool.
Yeah, that is really cool.
But I'll never write about it.
You need to do it because I want to play in that world now. So,
well, this is the thing. I feel like I could easily run a campaign in Esteroth and Idria.
Yeah.
It's the other continents and countries.
You don't
have
to worry about that. This is a good tip. This is a good tip. Incoming tip. This is an incoming tip. And I'm going to do it. I'm going to say
it.
No. So two tips out of this.
I'm not listening.
Then quiet yourself. First tip, don't build the entire world at once.
My heart.
Second tip is force yourself to write about it by telling people you're going to run a campaign in it.
God, I think you just killed me.
How do you feel about those tips, Ben?
I hate them, but I only hate them because they don't work for me, right? And here's why.
Right.
I think those are great tips if they work for you, but they will not work for me for two reasons.
Okay.
And I'm going to contradict myself a little bit on one of them. So the first one.
Good start.
Don't write out the whole world. Mm-hmm. I can't do it because I am not a, what's the phrase? When you write, you either write by the seat of your pants or you plot, right?
Yeah. We've been through this before about our prep styles. We've said this before. Right?
I'm a mix of the two, right? So I will happily write by the seat of my pants and adapt things based on what the players are doing. And that's why I love D&D.
Yeah.
But if I haven't got a base to work with, it doesn't work for me.
Right.
Because I have to, I like to foreshadow and build and set things up. So
plot.
I don't need to have the entirety of, you know, the third continent plotted out. I can't remember the names of that looking.
Yeah.
I don't need it all plotted out and written or, you know, I don't need to know what's going on over there. I just need a rough idea. So for example, every continent in my world has a college in it. And those colleges align with the bard schools.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I don't know which colleges are in the other countries, I can't reference it when we're playing, and that's important to me. If I don't know who the bad guys are and where they're from, I can't reference their culture, and that's important to me.
You know, I think you've shot yourself in the foot there, though.
Why?
Because you've created world lore without creating the world.
No. Incorrect. because what I do...
Okay.
What I do is I build out the place, and I build out the information and all the stuff that I would need to run it. So I look at it in a sense of, okay, when I built Esteroth, I was like, right, okay, I've got the map. I've got five cities. Here are the names. Cool. And then I take it city at a time and I'd go, city one, population, this number, this demographic. This is what it's known for. This is what it's like. Here are some things about it. So with the Rector City, I'd be like, okay, this is the home of the Rector. So they have this, 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 and this. And then I'd write about it. And then I go to another city and I do population, location, what they're known for, and I'd write it separately.
Yeah, separately.
And as I'm doing that, they'd link and then more would come out. And so I'd build the world and the lore together.
Right.
And I'd change things and rewrite things. So I would do that with the other countries. I would go to them and be like, okay, well, this is the country where the School of Swords comes. This is actually true, this bit.
Okay.
This country has the School of Swords, a College of Swords in it, or whatever it's called.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, why do I want the College of Swords? Well, this is the country that I want to have been ravaged by the creatures that are spawned by the convergence. So this is where you need monster hunters. You need
combat,
people who are trained.
Right,
this is like the rough and ready. This is the wilderness. And so like, that's like, that builds the lore, but it also builds the world and it impacts on the people that come from there. So if I hadn't done that, when you meet an NPC, I can't just, if I haven't built that, I can't frivolously go, oh, this person's from X country.
Yeah.
And then give you, like, and have them be a certain way. Whereas if I've built it out, I can go, oh, yeah, this person, you know, this person from all their scars is from this place. And you know that because. And that, for me, makes the world feel more real when we're playing in it. So I have to write out in, if I can't put you in a random country somewhere in the world and run a session, it's not ready to be played.
That's insane.
But I don't need, this is the thing. I think people hear that and they go, oh God, so you're writing everything before you run. No, not writing everything. I just know enough.
You have an overview of those areas, right?
Yeah. And the areas that I run
fine.
Will be deeper. They'll be the ones that I've worked more on.
That's different, Ben. So what I'm saying is you can still have an overview of that area. You can be like, well, this is the area where, for example, in my terrible homebrew world, I also had a continent run by dragons, which had Japanese influences in it. But I knew that was like a dragon continent and these are the names of the people who run it.
I had an island,
but I didn't have anything
trapped on it.
Right? Everyone needs a dragon island.
It was called Dragon Tooth Point.
Cute. Okay.
Thanks.
I can't remember what mine was called. It was that bad. Fun fact there. Anyway. yeah. So you can overview things. That's fine.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the one I'm writing right now, my Homebrew World Now, is more just of a continent right now. But here's a top tip. But if you don't want to worry about the rest of the world, you can say, the seas are too dangerous to travel.
Yeah, but I don't like that.
I do. I like it's great.
I build my storytelling on foreshadowing. Like, I yeah. love to foreshadow things. And like, okay, I'm not going to lie, Dave. There are times when things have come up in the game and I've gone, oh, fuck, I don't know. Oh, God. And then I say something and I go, oh, my God, that's fucking genius, because it looks like I've been foreshadowing that the whole time.
Yeah.
So there are times when I accidentally foreshadow things that don't exist. But most of the time, I like to have enough to tease you. I want to tease you with it, tantalize you, because then when we get to the, and it's for me and for the players, when we get to the point where the players go, oh my God, I know what this is, and they put it all together, I'm like, yeah, you love my world, you've been paying attention. And they go, oh my God, I'm a fucking genius, I've worked it out. And that's great for both of us. What was your other original point that I said I was going to conflict myself on?
Well, so I said, you don't have to build it all at once and start a campaign. So you are forced to write about it.
Right, yes. Okay. I agree with that if it's prep. I can't do that if it's... like the whole world. Like if I haven't written the world, if I don't know anything about the world and I set a deadline, nope, it's not gonna happen. That's gonna stress me the fuck out.
So I thrive on that.
If the world's done, if it's all fit and I could happily run a game there and all I've got to, because for me, writing the world and the lore and then writing a story for that world and lore, very different. Like the world has kind of inbuilt stories to it that could be massive campaign plot hooks, but they're probably not the campaigns I'm gonna run. Like this has guess where this inspiration came from? The floating mines that are these like disc cities, right? With little guard golems. Hi Ghibli. Two of them fell, and one of them is still up there somewhere, and there's this ancient resource on there. And like that's a plot hook. That's a go find the one that's still up there. But I'm never gonna run that story. I'm never gonna run that. That's just a part of the world. So if it's world building, can't do the deadline. If it's if it's story, if it's, hey guys, we're going to run a campaign and our first session's in 2 months' time and I haven't done the prep and, haven't done the prep and written out all of the story and stuff, that I can do on a deadline. But that's just me, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you can take Dave's horrible advice if you want.
You can take my terrible advice. I thrive on deadlines because my entire job revolves around deadlines.
Which is funny because my job revolves around like the minutest of deadlines to the minute of times.
Yeah, exactly. So that's probably maybe why you want to avoid it, because you have such
maybe
like
that's
an
why
intense,
I hate them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
Oh God. Yeah.
So mine are more large scale. Anyway. That I need pressure behind me, otherwise I won't do it. That's why it works for me.
To link this back into our overall topic, that is a good piece of advice for like finding motivation, because that pressure can work for people.
It works for me.
And if you haven't tried it, I mean, it's obviously it's a bit risky because you might find that it doesn't work and your thing's not ready, but...
But then you can always say, look, I'm not quite ready, it's getting extended. Or this ain't gonna work until I'm ready.
Right?
Don't be like, the pressure is there for you to set yourself a deadline. Even if you don't want to do it this campaign specific method where you set yourself a horrendous deadline like me, you can just set yourself a deadline and say, right, I'm gonna write 10 things about my world by the end of this date. Like end of this month, 10 things. Right? It's still a deadline.
Then like put pressure on for yourself. So like, okay, if I don't do it, I don't get the takeaway that I really want.
Exactly.
Give yourself a reward for it.
A reward, yeah, exactly.
100%. Yeah, it's good to try, I think, because you might find it works for you, like, yeah. Dave. You might find that it doesn't, like, for me, or you might find that it's nuanced, like I do, where it works for some things but not for others.
Right.
Not terrible advice. Just not.
Not bad advice.
Just not advice that I follow, which therefore means it's clearly terrible advice, Dave.
Of course.
I think that's how it works, mate.
Is that the rules?
yeah, those are the rules. If I don't say it, it's not good on
makes
my own
sense.
Show.
Makes perfect sense.
That's a joke, everybody. I'm joking. I don't actually think that, just to be clear. Yeah.
If you go on the server, people will just give Ben abuse about it anyway, so it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to abuse me... I mean, that's what the Patreon subscription levels are for.
Shameless plug there.
Hey, speaking of which, if you want to support the podcast, there are great ways of doing it. In fact, by supporting some other wonderful people out there in the world, yeah, we share it all here on We Speak Common. Our first and our longest running partners are the wonderful Ben and Dave. It always gets confusing when it's you and me on this episode.
It does.
From Dice Dungeon. Who are UK guys. They sell dice and all the other paraphernalia that you need for D&D, including books, dice trays, bags for traveling around with all of your books, which if you are a rolling DM, oh my God, so, so good. The Dice Dungeon is, there's a link in the description below, you can go check it out, and they've just launched a whole new line of resin dice. I think there's a, hang on, I want to double check how many they are because I want to get it right. There are, oh God, here we go. Should we count them? Should we count them together?
Go for
it. These were announced literally days ago on the 20th of February. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 new sets of resin dice. These are premium D&D dice that are not going to hurt your wallet because the resin are some of the more cost-effective, beautiful sets they've got compared to their metal and glass sets. These new sets include Goblin's Blood, Green Dragon's Fury, Passion, Red Dragon's Fury, Sacred Flame, Sweetheart, cute, Summer Solstice, and Shepherd's Delight, which actually are my favourite. They look like the way the sky looks when the sun sets perfectly. That's the best way I can describe it. You can go and check out these wonderful dice at the link below, and of course all the other things they've got going on, the books, the dice rolling trays. I highly recommend the scroll that rolls out into a little tray that you can put your dice in. I use it every single session. They are gorgeous. The scrolls are many things, and they come in 3 different colors. Check them all out.
I just got really distracted by the Green Dragon's Fury and the Goblin Blood.
They're nice, aren't they?
Very, very nice. And they are a good price.
Go and check them out. Stick them in your cart. And then if you feel that price is still a bit high, because let's face it, the world's in a weird place right now, then don't worry. You can get yourself 10% off your entire order by using the code WESPEAKCOMMON at checkout. And that will, of course, support the show. Our other wonderful, wonderful patrons... not patrons, that's the wrong word. Supporters, partners. There's so many words in the English lexicon.
Peas.
Art, describe. Pardon?
Peas. Lots of peas.
Peas. Yes, lots of peas, as we know. Describe, DSCRYB.com, are the bards of real life. They have professional creative writers doing the hard work, creating box text that you can use in any adventure. Right now, there's over 9,800 scenes from a bunch of different collections, including places, items, characters, nature, monsters, dialogue, planes and deities, vehicles and mounts, spells, player-based reading, plane of... Oh, I breathed. I was trying to do it without breathing. There's the plane of fairy, and there's the Enchanter Academy as well. Go and have a look. Oh my God, so much good stuff you can use in your games for setting the scenes, for immersing your players and yourself as well, or as a player, immersing everyone around you. There's 500 available for free right now, and they're doing loads of extra stuff all the time. For example, hey, this is fun. They have a Sonic library, as in sounds. The Sonic library sounds like adventure. Film quality library of sound effects, music, and ambiences. Presented exclusively for you if you subscribe to Describe. You can get access using the link in the description below, and then if you want to subscribe and get 10% off every month for the first 2 years that you're subscribed, you can use the code COMMON at checkout. There you go. There are wonderful partners. And of course, if you want to support us directly, there's a Patreon too. That link's down below. Gets you access to the server. It's really great. Okay, I want to talk about motivation versus what's the word? What's the right word for it? It begins with a D. It's not dedication. It's discipline. Motivation versus discipline. And this is what, and hear me out here, Dave.
Okay.
This is what got me back in the gym.
Okay.
Now, I know that working out, lifting weights, is very far removed from sitting down writing about fantasy worlds with elves and goblins. However...
Is this a shameless plug to tell everyone that you're exercising?
I'm so pumped. going to the gym is something that I really struggle with for motivation, and it's so good for your mental health, it's so good for your physical health. Like, you just, oh god, I sound like my therapist. You should do it, right? But it's hard to get motivated, especially after work or early in the morning. I'm not an early morning gymmer. I go after work because I finish at a decent time. It's great. But I found that it wasn't motivation that I was lacking. It was the discipline of it. So I could really want to go to the gym. Like today, I really wanted to go up to the roof, jump rope, lift some weights, drink water, be in the sun. But as soon as I walked through my front door, I was like, oh, that bed looks comfy.
Yeah.
Oh, God. And I was like fighting with my own brain to be like, no, 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 you want to do it, so you should do it. Like, you're motivated. You want to go, so you should. And it wasn't the motivation that got me up there. It was the discipline of saying to myself, don't be a dick. Go and do 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just 10 minutes. And you'll hear this everywhere. But what you find is, especially with the gym, I mean, it's a bit different for me because I have a gym in my building. So I just have to go up to the 15th floor.
Great. Yeah.
Just go up to the roof.
Yeah.
But when I didn't have a gym in my building, it would help is, you know, you'd get in the car, you put your kit on, you drive to the gym, you get there, you sat in the car and you're like, oh God. And it's like, well, look, you're here now. Just do 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's all about just go, just drive there. And if you get there and you hate it, drive back or just go inside and do 10 minutes. And if you hate it, if you just do 10 minutes, fine. That's it. You're done.
Yeah.
But what you will find 9 times out of 10 is that you'll go, oh, well, I've driven here now. I might as well do it. Yeah. Oh, well, I'm in the gym now. I've done 10 minutes. I might as well do an hour.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same with writing.
Yeah. Of therapists. My therapist also told me that because I, when I've been really bad with my depression in the past, my brain doesn't want to move, let alone do anything else. So the person sort of like said, if it's washing up or anything, just go and try it. And if you don't like it, you can stop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
100%.
It's just...
That's it. That's the secret.
Yeah.
That's the secret sauce. It's okay to not do it.
Yeah.
If you try to do it.
As long as you try. Yeah.
My problem is that I haven't tried to write about my world in 2 years. So that's not okay. But if I have if I bring that discipline in and I go, okay, I've got 10 minutes. I'm going to pull out my laptop and I'm going to write for 10 minutes, just 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just 10 minutes. And if I do 10 minutes, either I've got 10 minutes of writing done, and that's a little
amazing.
Trick.
Yeah.
Great. Might not be good writing, but it's writing that
it's
I can
writing.
Work on down the line.
Even if you just make notes and like tips of like for later on, like little bullet points.
Right. 9 times out of 10, what will happen is I'll start and then I'll hyperfocus and 2 hours will pass and I won't.
Exactly.
Do
yeah,
so,
yeah.
But, you know, it's, I mean, don't do that. That's unhealthy. Eat your dinner.
Eat your dinner. Have a drink. Right.
I think that is probably the biggest tip I can give on this subject is it's not motivation, it's discipline. Just do a little bit. And then if you don't want to do it, you don't want to do it. And I've done that before. There have been times when I've sat down and I've gone, I'm just going to do a little bit. And I do a little bit and I go, this is shit. Like what I've written is
not
awful.
Idea.
I don't like it. I don't feel it. I've done I've done 20 minutes. I've done half an hour. I'm overwhelmed by all the new things I've come up with.
Yeah.
MacBook closes.
Done. Don't have to worry about it.
Yeah. And other times I've sat down and written for an hour and it's been great.
Yeah.
Take that tip into everything in life. Oh my God, it's a game changer.
Yeah. It really
is. Absolutely game changer.
It really is. Look at us That got real deep again.
I like it though. It's actually
a genuinely amazing life tip.
I have one more motivational tip.
Go on, throw it at us.
If you didn't think I was a child, here I am telling you that I'm a big child.
Yeah.
Give yourself gold stars. Wow. Reward yourself. Right. It can be anything. It can be anything.
I think we've already said this though. We've already been over this.
No, we said set a deadline and reward yourself if you do meet the deadline, because then there's pressure. Like, you have to meet the deadline to get something. But what I mean is reward yourself in everything. So if you're sat writing and you're like, oh God, I really just need to get like 500 words out because that'll start my brain going. Yeah. Then give yourself a reward. Oh, if I get 500 words out, I can make a cup of tea and have a biscuit. Oh my God, that 500 words would be out of my brain so quickly. That's the most British thing I've ever said.
Yeah, that really is.
Oh, every time I write a new paragraph, I can eat a Skittle. Oh my God, have a pack of Skittles.
Skittle's a good one. Yeah.
You have to not like just eat the packet, obviously.
This is my problem.
That's discipline.
Discipline is not something I have very much in life.
Just reward yourself with every little bit, every little step. Eventually the rewards will become bigger and it'll be like, okay, well, when I've written 5,000 words, I'll have something. But start small. Don't set small boundaries, set small goals. I feel like what I'm saying is it's not about motivation. It's about
discipline,
tricking yourself into feeling the motivation and doing it. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. No, I think that's what motivation is though, right? Like, you can have spur of the moment motivation where you have like, oh, that's a great idea, I'll write that down. Or you can have, right, I need to do this. How am I going to do that?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's inspiration and motivation, right? If you have inspiration, you write something down, you have to motivate yourself to do something that you don't want to do.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, I'm not inspired or motivated at the moment because I know I'm not going to use it for anything and I'm not going to get any gratification from it.
Yeah.
Which is where that set the deadline of a campaign comes in.
Exactly. And,
you know, set the expectation you're going to use it, use rewards, use discipline. Okay, I think I would have to use every single one of these tips in conjunction with each other to really kickstart it because I'm in a proper funk with it.
Yeah. I mean,
it's not that I don't want to have a world. I do, but it just takes a lot sometimes.
Yeah,
but that's okay.
And I think the thing with me is I need other people talking about it to get me going with it. So like, that's another great thing about having a campaign is people make the characters. They're like, oh, can we have this? Can we have that? Or how's this work? And it forces me to make those choices and those decisions and that lore, because someone's like, oh, I want to be a warlock. Well, I'm like, oh, well, I need to create a bunch of things that you can have as a patron.
Oh God, what would be a patron? Yeah.
Yeah, right. That's where Glam came from. So, you know.
And look how good that is.
Exactly. So.
Yeah. Okay. I think, look, I'm not going to go away and start writing my world right now. I'm not. but that's okay, and that's okay.
Yeah.
It's not a race, you know. No. It's not a like, and you don't need to have a homebrew world. God, just run the pre-written ones. We love them.
It's much easier. Got one,
and yeah, it is. If you've got one and you're struggling to write it, then don't beat yourself up on it because that will suck the motivation out of it.
It really does. I think homebrew, anything homebrew is a passion project. And don't get me wrong, pre-written worlds and pre-existing campaign settings, you can be passionate about them. I'm very passionate about Eberron. You're passionate about Faber, and we both spoke about this before. But I think homebrew is very different in the sense that you have created that utterly and it is completely you.
Yeah.
So you need that passion there. If you don't have that passion there, it's probably not for you, or yet it's not right yet. And you can come back to it, or you need that feel. Like you said, you've got no gratification from it right now. There's no end goal almost.
Mm. Yeah.
I think you need that to write it, to be honest.
Yeah, like if I knew my next campaign was going to be homebrew.
Yeah, you do it.
Then I'd be like, right, cool, I've got the reason. Let's go.
Exactly.
Give myself a reason.
Yeah.
But because I know my next campaign isn't going to be that, it's going to be something else.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows what? Ooh, suspense.
Even though you mentioned it several times. I'm very excited for that, though. I'm so hyped for it.
Oh, mate, it's going to be so good.
It's going to be good.
It's going to be so good and so different to anything we've played in such a long time.
I think that's what I'm excited for. Sorry, off topic again. I'm very excited for that because all your players are very established in your world and I'm new on the scene. So...
Oh. We're so ready for a break from that world.
Yeah.
So ready. I'm
to
terrified.
All be fresh
of it.
In that world.
Terrified.
I'm very excited
about
it. I'm very excited to learn new things.
And like, that's a campaign I've wanted to run since it released. Like, I've literally got everything from the Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. I'm terrified, but I'm really excited. So I know that I'm not going to find the motivation or the discipline to write my homebrew because I'm not going to use it. I'm going to do that next. So,
exactly.
You know. The timing's not right. That there you go. There's my final tip. The timing has to be right.
Correct. Yeah.
And no one else can set that. You can only set that for yourself. So don't beat yourself up about it, man. All right.
Don't.
Chill.
Don't do it.
Chill the fuck out, dude. All right.
I think being chilled is another. That does help. Don't stress yourself over it because it's not going to be fun.
No. And it's got to be
yourself.
Fun.
Yeah. Enjoy yourself. Tip number 20, however random the ones we said.
Wacky. There we go.
That was fun.
I mean, I feel like that was one of the most conversational episodes we've had in a long time. So hopefully you've been making notes as you've listened and you picked things out.
Always.
I've forgotten all my tips that I said already, so I can't recap them. But hey, if you are writing Homebrew World and you want some inspiration, you want a bit of help, then come and chat to us. Maybe you want to just flex the writing muscle that you have in the back of your brain. We've got some stuff for that over on the We Speak Common Discord server, which you can get access to right now for free by heading to the description of this episode. You can come and join us as a commoner. And if you like what you see and you want access to everything else, like the main hall, like the topic suggestions channel, like the vibe zone where you can sit and chill, if you want to see all the behind the scenes stuff and get involved with like the character creations, the encounter building, the homebrew stuff and the Candlekeep corner, then come and join our Patreon. There's a link to that in the description down below too. Dave, have you're on the show all the time and I never ask you this and I feel rude. I've realised the other day that I've never asked you this. Have you got anything you want to plug? Have you got anything you've got going on that you want to tell people about? You can say no.
I feel surprised now, Ben. I feel unready.
Oh, God, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry. I fucked it.
I'm
shook. Do you want to just tell everyone?
You know what?
About your day or something? What you got going on?
I'm going to plug myself. I'm Dave and I'm amazing. So thanks.
Cool. There you go. That's what Dave's got going on. Right.
I was not prepared to plug things.
No, that's fine. I didn't know if you had anything. I just thought I'd give you the opportunity.
Not at the moment. I appreciate the plug. The offer of plug. I will maybe get prepared next time. And I might plug something. Who knows?
And next time, I won't ask.
Yeah, and I'll just be like, excuse me,
I want to talk about me and what I've got going on, thank you. Okay, well, on that bombshell that Dave has nothing going on in his life, Mr. Plug, let's end it there. It's been an absolute blast. Thank you for coming and chatting to me today, mate.
No, thanks, mate.
Any time. See you later.
Bye-bye now.
For listening to the We Speak Common podcast network. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to leave a review on your platform of choice and share us with a friend or D&D group near you. If you'd like to directly support the network and the production of new shows like the one you heard today, head to the description of this episode or our social media pages for a link to our Patreon page. You can connect with the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at We Speak Common. The network theme is Street Dancing by Timecrawler 82 and is held under a Creative Commons 4.0 license. You can find it on the Free Music Archive.